Welcome to another edition of the Dogger Pass Podcast. This for UFC 298. Paul Shaughnessy here. Producer Megan is on the sticks. Cody Saftick is on the line. This episode of the Dogger Pass Podcast and all episodes of the Dogger Pass Podcast are brought to you by Prize Picks. Use promo code DOP when making a new account to get a match up to $100 on your first deposit. We had pretty similar picks last week, Cody, except for, we are recording this far in advance. I'm going away on vacation next week. When Mayo goes away and I don't have to run the studio, I look for an opportunity to get away. Leaving the country, going down to Florida. Haven't left Canada since before COVID. So we've been having some pretty nasty weather here with like storms and stuff like that. Looking forward to wearing shorts and maybe going to a beach, play some golf. There's like a little like, yeah, there's a lot of things. May go on like, you know, in like Florida, you know, like those boats with like the big fans on the back of them. We may go on one of those types of trips too.
I've been on one of those fan boats. It was actually really good. It was like a gator farm. Yeah. So they'd be like, look at the size of that gator. Look at the size of that gator. And it was like actually a really good time. So yeah, you're definitely well past due for a vacation, so enjoy this. It's just so sad that it's like your vacations, like you said, you have to plan around Pat's vacations and Pat's time off because the grind goes on, brother. So you had the opt-out that we could have, I don't know, not filled in a different house. That would have been weird. But Pat could have done it, or maybe I could have done it myself. I don't know. But fact is, you were like, you know what? Let's just do it on Sunday, right after the fights. We're both tired. It's a late night. It's actually Super Bowl Sunday. But the show goes on, baby. So we're coming off a good week where we had similar picks. Hopefully things will line up this week and we can keep the train rolling.
Yes, sir. Very, very good. The only one that we had a difference on, and I hate to pat myself on the back, but it was Vieira and Petrosian. And I said, like, a guy with that type of skill, you know, getting the fight to the mat. Finds the arm
two
and
things.
Got three takedowns and got the arm triangle. Like, it looked pretty clinical. When I saw him on the scales on Saturday, I was just, on Friday, I was just like, he's looking good. He's looking ready to roll.
Yeah, he was definitely looking ready to roll. But I don't know. It wasn't like on my end, losing by first round submission is bad optics, bad pick. You're right. Completely right. At the same time, yes, it's a fight game. Like, I'm chewing this guy up at distance. His leg's getting blown off. He's getting punched in the face. I'm thinking to myself, Vieira's an idiot. He hasn't even shot yet. And then there's like, I don't know, halfway through the round, he shoots for the first time. And then you're right. Once he put hands on him, he was obviously strong. He's picking up and slamming him. He's exhausting himself. The plan was get out of the first round. We're like 10 seconds away from doing exactly that. And yeah, he tapped, but it was like a phantom tap. He wasn't quite all the way out. Like, either he could have survived another 10 seconds. Like, by the glory of the gods, had he not tapped and they stopped, I got no contest. Ooh, I would have taken it. Not too proud to take a no contest when things aren't going in my favor, Paul. Like that time Ronnie Lawrence versus Daniel Argueta. Oh, I'll take it all day.
Yeah.
Main thing is, yeah, dude, it was a 14 fight card. And then overall, I went 11-2 with the no contest. And then you went 12-1 with a no contest. So crazy. But there's bounces. There's bounces to be had. And unfortunately, the Petrosian one wasn't one of them. I had him a little high. The other pick I got wrong, Zach Pauga. Another guy I think actually couldn't win that fight. I think he can win that fight. He just fought a really stupid game. The most success he had was that 90 seconds he had in the cliffhanger. Guskov's got power for presumably that one round. Why go back to range and strike with him? Anyways, that's just the bounces of the game. If that was a 12 fight card, you could have swept it. It was a 14 fight card. A couple things went the other way. The main thing is the guys that we needed to win won. The four underdogs that we went with all won. Hermanson in the main event. We're not going to complain about a night like that. No doubt.
No complaints whatsoever. I just wanted to like dig you a little bit. But no, like the thing of, yeah, it's the fight game.
Yeah,
it's like,
fair enough.
If that round, like if he doesn't tap, if he gets out of round, like if Petrosian gets out of round one, the fight probably like very well could get flipped on its head. You know what I mean? Like that's the margins there. Sometimes people are like, oh, he absolutely killed him. Oh my God, that was so easy. It's just like, yeah, it was, you know, Rodolfo's That's the reason why it's like a 50-50 fight, right? And that was the 50%, you know, domination from Rodolfo. But yeah, I was not. I was praying to the gods when he was there. I was just like, oh my God, please tap him. Please tap him. Because I did not want it to get out of that first round. Trust me.
The one that got me was I actually had to work at Fight Network last night for the they had a BYB card, the bare knuckle boxing, Dada 5000 and the Trigon. So I was driving, right? And I had the Giles fight versus Prades on the radio. Like my phone was connected and I could listen to it through the radio. Couldn't see it. And it just sounds like Giles is fighting the fight of his life, Paul. Like he's about to really fucking screw me here. Yeah. And he is going through the motions and doing the damn thing. And then all of a sudden it was just like plunk and he's out.
That's what Prades
does. Whoever would have been stuck in traffic with me would have looked over there and been like, this guy's going berserk. So the bounces of the fight game, right? Can't emphasize that enough.
Yeah, Prades was looking pretty bad up until the point that Giles was dead.
He was about to go down two rounds, right? He knocked him out at the end of the second, so he wasn't down two rounds. But had the third started and you're down 0-2, like, you've got problems on your hands. Same thing with the Hermanson fight. Like, we had Jack, and I'm watching it. I'm thinking, like, Jack's going to work his way back into this. The third round's key because you dropped the first two, right? Got to win those last three. The third round's key. Like, turn the tide now and start making it happen. So we've got a loaded pay-per-view. Like, we complain about the structure of cards all the time and, like, the what's good and what's bad. But, like, this is a tight pay-per-view. So we had success with a cheesy little fight night. Take it all day. Hopefully that translates into the bigger cards.
All right. Main event. We've got Alexander the Great Volkanovski taking on Ilya Topuria. Minus 120 for the champ. Alexander Volkanovski plus 100 for Topuria. Lots of money's been coming in on Topuria. Obviously, like, we've been super high on him. I mean, I bet him in his UFC debut at like a plus 150 underdog against Yusuf Salal. And every single fight, it seems like this guy's getting better. And, like, all of the skills that you kind of saw in the regional scene are, you know, coming into form. He's got good grappling. His striking is definitely on point. Super, super dangerous guy. A guy I respect a lot in this division. I'm going with Volkanovski in the main event here because I feel like this line is getting skewed by what happened with Volkanovski taking the rematch against Makhachev over in the Middle East on like 10 days notice, fighting a man who's much bigger than him. Obviously, got knocked out bad. That could happen here. Topuria is a bad man. But I feel like this line, maybe it's just begging me. Maybe it's a bit of a quote-unquote trap, but I feel like Volkanovski can probably secure takedowns, and if he does, he can just hang out in guard, stay out of trouble. I mean, he was on the mat with Brian Ortega. Brian Ortega almost got him out of there, but like that's some of the best jiu-jitsu in the featherweight division, and he was still able to get himself out of that situation. He throws crazy volume. The pace is super high. I'm not trying to smear Topuria whatsoever, but I like pick 'em odds, give me the champ to retain. Like I think like if that Makhachev fight, which was a horrible spot, short notice against Makhachev, didn't happen for Volkanovski, and he didn't go into the presser afterwards and talk about how he's having some like mental health issues and stuff like that, I feel like it's probably more like minus 175 plus 150. So I'm going to take the champ to retain under that type of premise there. What about you?
Yeah, obviously we haven't spoke prehand, but man, I got much of the same opinions. If that fight with Makhachev hadn't happened, how good's this line for Alexander Volkanovski right now? Because here's a guy who's known as the featherweight GOAT. No one's saying that Jose Aldo is a better featherweight champion than Alexander Volkanovski. Very few people are saying Conor McGregor was a dope fighter, don't get me wrong, in his heyday, but he never defended titles, right? Like, he can't be the greatest featherweight of all time. Volkanovski, he's the GOAT. Dude moves up to 155 to fight Islam Makhachev the first time. Guy almost beats Islam Makhachev the first time. Some people scored it for him. Gives him hell in the fifth round. He's like the number one guy in the pound for pound list. Even though he lost to Makhachev, because he's a lighter guy coming up, it's like this guy is what the definition of pound for pound is. The man. And then you're right. He takes the one fight, short notice, gets knocked down. It's like his stock's completely gone. Like, MMA is a savage beast, man. You spend all this time creating these accolades and having these career performances and beating all the best guys. And you have like one blunder, trying to be a company man, trying to save a card on 10 days notice, taking one for the team. still up a weight class against the new pound for pound king right now. And it's just like, yeah, yesterday's news. So I don't know, man. I think I'm totally agree. There's some supreme value on him based on, you know what you're getting. You know you're getting a legendary fighter, a first ballot Hall of Famer, 45-pound weight class where he thrives at, and he's the best. For even money, like, it makes a whole lot of sense to me. Now, Topuria, you're right. We're on this guy. And in many ways, he is the future. He's 27 years old. Alexander Volkanovski's 35. So even if Volkanovski beats him here right now, yeah, there's going to be a time where Topuria is eventually going to surpass him and eventually will be the champ. And Volkanovski either goes to 55 or retires. But, you know, time is on Topuria's side. But in some similarities to him the Joe Pyfer fight against Hermanson last weekend is that what happens with these young, really uber-talented young prospects is they look good against not necessarily subpar talent, but not the best guys in the world. And they get a couple good little wins. And then all of a sudden, it's like, that's the man. But they haven't proven it quite yet. They haven't really shown us those that gritty performance, that win over that top echelon guy. Now, Pyfer really had it. Topuria, at least he's got some credible victories. But Paul, again, when you look at it, it's not even the same ballpark as the competition of Volkanovski's fought. His last three fights is the Jay Herbert fight, right? Where he gets booted in the face, almost gets knocked out in the first round by a journeyman in Jay Herbert. The Bryce Mitchell fight where Bryce Mitchell has a stomach bug and Bryce has proven that he's not really a top 10 guy. And then Josh Emmett, which a nice little win, but he had Josh Emmett's number. Josh Emmett wasn't able to take him down. He was able to take him down, grind him a little bit, outstrike him, beat him up, demoralize him. That's fair. How would Josh Emmett do versus Alexander Volkanovski? I don't think very good. How would Bryce Mitchell do against Alexander Volkanovski? I really don't think any good. How would Jai Herbert do against Alexander Volkanovski? Or how about Ryan Hall, the win prior to that? So, yeah, he looks good. And, yeah, he's 27. And, yeah, he's got a BJJ black belt. He's built like a Georgian brick shit house. Very physically strong. Striking's definitely coming. Seems to have a good chin. I mean, Herbert almost knocked him out. But still, he took Herbert's best shot. If anything, the kid's got some firepower. Yeah, there's things to like about Topuria. It's just, I don't know in this fight against Alexander Volkanovski, if you can't take Volkanovski down, which is entirely possible, it's like now you got to strike the whole time. Fine striker, power striker. But if you're not landing those big shots, one has to wonder if Volkanovski doesn't, you know, use that work rate, use those leg kicks, use that inside, use that pressure, just keep coming forward and piling up on him. Now, what I liked about Topuria's fight versus Emmett is even though he knocked him down like three times, had the guy dead to rights, damn near killed him, it still went the distance. And at least he showed in a 5-round fight that he could go the 5 rounds. Because as I compared him to Pyfer, Pyfer hadn't shown he could go 5 rounds, so there was a question mark. Topuria showed you could. But in that 5th round, he just took it right off. He landed 8 significant strikes in the 5th round. 55 significant strikes landed in the 4th round. And I'm not saying he was flat gassed in the 5th, but he took it off. His fight with as you mentioned, his UFC debut, only fight that's gone the distance, other than that Emmett fight. Again, he's tired the longer the fight goes. You can make the argument UFC debut, you can make the argument short notice. I feel like there's something that could be exploited there in a 5-round situation. So if Volkanovski can really get on the gas tank, really pressure this guy, make him counter wrestle, make him, you know, fight off the defense, put some of that volume on him, put some of that pressure, I think for even money, you would have to favor the champ. So I'm going to agree with your sentiments, man. Am I expecting a close fight? Yeah. Am I expecting a war? Yeah. But I got to go with the devil I know, then the devil I don't. And Topuria's got some things he needs to prove still to this point, whereas Volkanovski, I'm comfortable with where he's at and what he brings to the table.
Co-main event, we've got Robert, the Reaper Whitaker, taking on Paulo Costa. Whitaker is a -220 favorite. Costa can be had for +185. Who you got?
Yeah, so this one's why MMA is MMA. Like Robert Whitaker, I think, is leaps and bounds better than Paulo Costa. He's way quicker, way more technical. He's got the veteran savvy. He's got the experience. He's got the cardio. He does everything right, and Paulo Costa gets away with doing just a ton of things wrong. But MMA is a cruel sport, man. These guys are fighting, punchy, kicky, hitting each other in the head. And I am very much worried about Robert Whitaker's durability because there is a history of him either getting knocked out or him getting beat up pretty bad. And to me, that's kind of at what point does it catch up to him, right? Now, there's a history of it. Again, he's fight all the way back at 170 pounds against Stephen Wonderboy Thompson back in the day, the first round knockout. Then you go to his fights with Yoel Romero the first time, drag him out, beat him up, lots of damage sustained in that fight. Goes to the next fight with Yoel Romero because they decide to run it back. Yoel landed 111 significant strikes over five rounds, two clean knockdowns, has Whitaker down on his feet multiple times, doesn't quite put him away. But sometimes not getting knocked out is worse than just getting knocked out. And just getting knocked out, that you end it. It's over. The continuous beating is what takes away, you know, time off your career. The sustained beating is what's going to to the, you know, to the end. He took a lot of damage in that fight. He goes right from that fight to his fight with Israel Adesanya, where again he gets knocked down twice and knocked out in the second round. So it's three fights. Yeah, the Thompson fight, wonderful. That's a long time ago. But in that period of time, three straight fights of just straight damage, man. And to me, he hasn't really recovered since. He looked flat against Darren Till, Jared Cannonier. He looked hesitant, but looked okay. His rematch with Israel Adesanya. Knocked down, ended up surviving the five rounds, but did get knocked down. And then his last fight with Dricus Duplessis, fights an okay first round. Second round, he gets taken down, which is very uncharacteristic for him. And when he gets taken down, he gets mauled on and gets knocked out again. So the only thing going Paulo Costa's way is that he's a specimen, dude. How he passes all those drug tests, I don't know. Because the guy's pretty jacked up. He's got some power. You know, he's got some notoriety. He's willing to go there and bang with you. And even though he could be behind on the scorecards, or even Whitaker could be chopping him up with that jab and making him look foolish, all it takes is that one counter right over the top. All it takes is that one left hook, sneak down. Like, something could get through and make it really bad for Robert Whitaker. The reason why I'm just going to bite the bullet and take Robert Whitaker is Paulo Costa couldn't knock out Luke Rockhold his last fight, Paul. That to me is problematic in its own. So if my whole narrative here on why I wouldn't pick the more skillful guy in Robert Whittaker is the narrative that I think he could be a little shop worm and could be there to get knocked out, it's like Luke Rockhold to get knocked out. He's like the most shop worm chinny guy of the division. So Paulo bangs, sure, but Paulo's wins, right? Gareth McClellan, which is a rugby player from South Africa, who got cut very quickly. Oluwole Bangbasse, he was fun as hell to watch, but he couldn't win. Johnny Hendricks, big fat Johnny, who got, you know, retired a short time afterwards because he sure as hell didn't have it by that point. Uriah Hall, who was like one of the bigger, you know, busts in UFC, recent UFC memory history, I guess. That was a terrible sentence, memory history. But Uriah Hall, you know, I never really got past the top 15. Yoel Romero, who at that point was in his 40s. And then he lost to Izzy and Marvin Vettori. And then beat Luke Rockhold, who's also near his 40s. And shop worn and retired and done. So, like, he's more of a character than there's actual proven results on paper. The wins, they're not there. The losses, to good guys. But Marvin Vettori, Izzy Adesanya, those are guys in the same conversation as Robert Whittaker, a former champion. He fought Vettori. He beat him. He fought Izzy twice, lost both times, but went the distance with him once. You know what I mean? Like, I just think there's levels to it. Now, Costa is an excellent character. Everybody loves him. And because of the knockout threat, people will put their money behind him for sure. But again, I just got to go with the better technique, the cleaner guy to, I think, just win a decision. I don't see him knocking out Paulo Costa. But again, I think with his footwork and his jab, stay to the outside. You're in a large cage. It's a pay-per-view. There's a full arena. Play smart, but hit this guy and move. And unlike the Yoel Romero fight, Yoel's super explosive and quick, right? Paul's a little more plodding, so the state of the outside game plan could work, but 15 minutes in the cage of Paulo Costa, easier said than done. So my best to Robert Whittaker, but he will be my pick.
Yeah, like I originally, when I kind of first looked at it, thinking of like where Robert Whittaker is, obviously Dricus absolutely beat him down. A pretty one-sided affair. Obviously, Dricus was a pretty big underdog coming into that. My initial thought was like, Whittaker is over the hill. But I had money on the under 1.5 rounds. And I think on Prize Picks, too, we beat that market by like 5 minutes. Because like they lined it on Prize Picks at like 12.5 minutes. And I was just like, pretty much a free square. Because like the 1.5 ended up going off as like super chalk to the under in that fight. Against Luke Rockhold, maybe one of the chinniest guys in middleweight division history. Like, after he had the belt, everything just kind of fell off of a cliff. And, yeah, like, Costa, you know, when he came into the UFC, he was a wrecking ball. I don't know what really happened. Obviously, he's focusing a little bit more on the, you know, the building of his brand these days, maybe, yeah, than being the best fighter you can possibly be. But I haven't seen it all that much in the last 3-4 years, to be perfectly honest, from him. I'll be curious. I mean, the early totals on this already got steamed. Over 1.5 rounds, opened at minus 185, and it got moved down to minus 240. So it's like, I'll be interested to see what, like, Whitaker by decision is. That may be how I attack this one. But the fact that that total is getting steamed already leads me to believe it's probably not going to be as generous. It'll probably be plus 100. Anything, if I can get, like, a plus 150, sign me right up. But I highly doubt that we actually get to that. But, yeah, Whitaker is going to be the pick for me as well. I think he just throws more volume, is a little bit more tactical in his approach. He just has to avoid the bomb. But it's like, I mean, Borchin threw those bombs at Luke Rockhold, who was way more chin. Even the shop-worn version of Robert Whitaker, it's like, going into that fight, Luke Rockhold was maybe the most shop-worn guy, like, in the division. Like, it was, everyone was expecting Paolo KO won. And it's like, it turned into a real fight. He wasn't able to get him out of there. Now, MMA is a crazy, crazy you-know-what. So, it's very, very in play that Paolo lands the perfect shot and knocks him out here. But for my money, it's Robert Whitaker. Use that jab, fight smart, mind your P's and Q's, and hopefully win a decision. Hopefully that prop is good enough that that I take a stab at that.
We're doing the show as well on a Sunday, right?
Exactly.
So there's an entire possibility this fight doesn't happen, because dating back to 2018, he pulled out of a fight with Uriah Hall because he had a torn bicep. Then he pulled out of a fight with Robert Whitaker in 2021 because he got sick. He pulled out of a fight with Jared Cannonier because he got sick. He pulled out of his first Ikram Aliskarov. I don't blame him on that one. And then he's supposed to fight Khamza, and he gets this elbow infection. And you can see when he announced the elbow infection, he wasn't in shape. He was never planning on taking the fight. It's just a really good way to boost your social media. Oh, Khamzat's hot. People are talking about him. You want your face on the poster next to him. You want to be in the discussion. You want to talk all this smack. And at the last minute, be like, sorry, elbow infection, I'm out. But yeah, that makes me wonder. Like, Whitaker's the kind of guy that shows up and takes these fights. In fact, Chimaev's on record being like, yeah, I wouldn't really want to fight Robert Whitaker, because you can recognize pure talent, but Father Time is the one that's undefeated, right? So, like, Whitaker's got all the talent in the world, but at what point does, you know, the durability just kind of evaporate? But I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, because Dreykus is the current champ, and pretty much everybody that's beaten him is one of the best guys that it's ever fought in the division. But yeah, it'll be a nail biter, I think, for a little bit until Whitaker eventually pulls away.
All right, we got Ian Machado Gary taking on Jeff Neal. Gary is a minus 210 favorite. Neal can be had for plus 180. How far removed? So, yeah, Gary was supposed to fight Vicente Luque back in December. And then he was kind of getting, like, social media bullied. And it was a very, very strange pullout. Obviously, he got sick in some way, shape, or form. But they flip him back around to this. And there's all the drama, Cody, about how Ian Gary, I'm sure you've seen the clip or whatever, where he, like, printed those T-shirts with Jeff Neal's mugshot on them, and he was, like, joking about it and yada yada yada. I believe I speak for everybody when I say we all want to see this guy get his head knocked off. But Jeff Neal plus 180, a striker going up against a long technical striker who's shown that's the fights that he can win. I just don't know if Jeff Neal's the guy to do it. Pains me. I probably won't bet it, and I will hate watch it, hoping that Jeff Neal pulls this off, because everyone likes Jeff Neal. He made one mistake. He, you know, whatever happened there. And then, yeah, Gary using that for, like, self-promotion is pretty shameless. But, yeah, the pick's going to be Gary. I want him to lose, though. So I know you're not supposed to let your emotions get in the way of money, but it's like, I would feel dirty having a Gary in one of my tickets. Who do you like here, buddy?
Yeah, you know, the last time that we talked about a Gary fight, it was supposed to be against Vicente Luque, and I was all for taking Vicente Luque at plus money. The difference there being is that Vicente Luque, for the first time in his career, was coming off the fight with Rafael Dos Anjos, where he just wrestled the entire time. Like, he had scored multiple takedowns over RDA, who's a badass. A badass former lightweight champion, upper weight class here, but a legitimate grappler. So to me, it was like, ooh, Vincente can strike with Gary, has trained with Gary, knows Gary's patterns and what he's, you know, is a little more familiar with that style because he's been in the training room with him. His coaches, his training partners, the whole team, they know Gary. And they exploit this guy's ground game. Take him down. Looking at Gary, he's given up a bunch of cheesy little takedowns throughout the course of his career. And one has to wonder, you know, that would definitely be a path to victory. If you're getting taken down by Darian Weeks, Gabe Green, twice by Song Kanon, problematic. But now you're flipping it. You're going to a guy that's virtually one-dimensional in Jeff Neal. Not only is he one-dimensional in that he's a striker, he's not going to lean on that wrestling, not going to lean on that jiu-jitsu a whole lot, is that he's primarily just a boxer. He's looking to put his hands on you. The kicks, yeah, they're there. This guy booted Mike Perry in the head once upon a time. But for the most part, I just feel like he's just looking to inch closer, get inside that pocket, unleash those hands on you. If this fight was in the apex, maybe a little bit easier just because it's a smaller cage, less room to have to travel. Maybe I can cut this guy off a little bit and then make him walk into one of my big murderous hooks. But in the large cage, these guys that are just quicker, and Jeff Neal is a talented fighter, but his gift is his power. It's not his speed. These quicker guys, they stay to the outside and they chew him up. They use range. They use a jab. They use little pitter-patter leg kicks. They stay mobile. And as long as you move laterally, you can just move around Jeff Neal. When he fought Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, it was an excellent example. Wonderboy Thompson, one of the best guys with distance management. And Jeff Neal just, he got really frustrated. He got frustrated from chasing, swinging at air, that even though it was a five-round fight and it was only the end of the fourth, walking back to his corner, he was just like, yeah, I'm done. Congratulated Wonderboy after the fourth, like, yeah, you won this fight. Like, quitting on himself. And that's that frustration because he's not a brawler, but he wants to fight the Mike Perry types. He wants to fight the Vicente Luque types. He wants to fight somebody that's going to stand in front of him and throw down. But if you're smart, technical, and you use that speed advantage from the outside, Shavkat Rakhmonov, they'll essentially double him up on the punch count. Like, he'll land 60 or 70 big shots, but they'll land 110, 120. They'll just be more active. They'll land a little cleaner, and eventually the judges will give it to them. And so as much as I don't like Ian Gary either, right? The mugshot thing, whatever. Bringing up Neil Magny's kids, like, that was a little weird. But just the whole, like, persona of, like, he shows up to the gym with the camera teams and the social media teams. And, you know, he talks a big game. And he got kicked out of SBG Ireland. He comes over to Florida, gets kicked out of a couple gyms in Florida, constantly moving gyms, constantly showing up with the social media hype, being able to wear the T-shirt, saying, ah, look at this, yeah, Jeff Neal, blah, 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 DUI, had a handgun in the car for the record. You know, talk shit. And then Sean Strickland or somebody talks a little shit to him online. MMA Guru talks a little shit to him online. And he just melts into the victim position. Like, I hope so bad this guy gets blasted in the face and gets knocked out. But from a betting standpoint, I think he wins more often than not on volume. So could he clip Neal and put him away? Yeah, but I think probably a decision. Stay to the outside, pitter-patter, stay smart. Keep in mind, he got dropped by Song Kanon. He could get dropped by Jeff Neal. But get up, recover, use that speed, move your feet, and just outpoint him. It's not pretty, and nobody likes the guy, but yeah, I think he probably does win this fight in the end. So I will take Ian Gary.
Yeah, and Gary will do that, and then he'll get on the microphone and pretend that he just did the biggest masterpiece and that we should all be in awe of the performance. He'll just hang out at range and, like, jab, 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 jab.
Yeah,
Those long range. Which fight was it that, like, after it, it was a pretty bad performance and he got on the mic and he painted the Mona Lisa. Like, he was just like, oh, this is, like, the most brilliant performance ever. Like, it was crazy. Everyone hates this guy. Like, it's working for him, I suppose, in a way. Like, it's definitely making people talk about him. It's not necessarily good. I don't know if he's selling more merch because of it, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it's a tough position because he comes from the school of Conor McGregor, where it's like, you grow up, young kid, you idolize McGregor, he's your countryman, and he's a slick-tongued Irishman, and that gets him to where he needs to go. But the difference is like, you can't take away from Conor what he did accomplish. Like, they weren't giving him easy fights. He's fighting Dustin Poirier, Diego Brandao, Dennis Seaver. Like, these guys were all actually good, and he's fighting them in his first few fights. To knock out Aldo in less than 10 seconds, to absolutely smoke Eddie Alvarez in that type of fashion in a masterpiece performance, he was very good. Gary is fighting the Darian Weeks of the world, the Gabe Greens of the world. Yeah, he's starting to fight a better level of competition, but... You know, is he the next coming? Like, I really don't think so. But yeah, this is what's going to get you those bigger fights. It's eventually you talk yourself into a situation you can't back out of, where they're going to be like, okay, we'll fight the next available best guy, and then you might run into problems. But yeah, I don't know. As for as many problems as he does have, clearly there's some skill there. Clearly, some of it's just persona. But. Yeah, you said it best earlier. It was like, you know, you can't let like a hatred for a guy blind you from a decent betting spot. I don't know how great of a betting spot this is, but if I was forced to bet the side, I feel like Ian Gary does get the job done.
Yeah, same here. All right, moving on down, we've got Merab Dvalishvili taking on Henry Cejudo. -180 for Merab, +155 for Cejudo. Interesting on Prize Picks, promo code DOP. They've got Merab's takedowns listed at 4, which I know Merab goes out there, he takes down everyone, and he's like, he's not very good at holding people down. So it's like he could get 4 in the first round. He's taking on Henry Cejudo. I don't have all the answers, but like he would have to get, you'd have to get 5 for you to lose that. 4 would be a push. That one just seemed, it's only a 3-round fight. It seemed a little bit jarring. I know Aljamain did manage to take down Henry 4 times in a 5-round fight last time out. I don't know. It just all seems kind of interesting. Do you have a hot take on this one, Cody? I love Merab. I think he's good, but I initial thoughts is I have interest in the underdog, Henry Cejudo, just because I think he, obviously being a Olympic champion in wrestling, can maybe thwart Merab's best path to victory, which is non-stop attacking takedowns. Like, the guy just spams takedowns and just forces you to defend the entirety of the fight. Cejudo seems like the kind of guy that maybe could put a wrench in those plans.
Yeah. I mean, stylistically, you 100% nailed it, is that Merab Dvalishvili doesn't rely too much on the wrestling, but that's clearly the staple of his game, is being able to take guys down 10, 11 times and just mash on them. That's what makes him highly effective. So yeah, now he's taking on an Olympic gold medalist, one of the best wrestlers of the division. Like, doesn't it kind of make sense that wrestling would be taken off the table? Aljamain Sterling got the takedowns. There's a teammate of Merab Dvalishvili. That's fair. So maybe he racks up quick takedowns. Like, the fight hits the ground, they credit you with the takedown, but then I just don't see him holding him down. Like, I think Cejudo pops back up, and then it's just really a scramble. And then who knows if they credit you with the takedown at all. But super interesting fight. The other thing is Cejudo is a natural 125-pounder, right? He was a world champion. He was world champion two-weight classes. But him at his best is 125. He's a flyweight. Beats Demetrius Johnson, even though I thought Johnson won that fight. Beat some good guys. Moves up to 135. At 135, he's getting these quick knockouts. TJ Dillashaw, Marlon Moraes, Dominic Cruz. Guys that you could all say were at the tail ends of their careers respectively. But I mean, he's getting those quick knockouts. I'd like to see someone drag him out in that prolonged, 5-round fight. The fight with Aljamain, what's interesting here is that Cejudo, the flyweight, fighting up at 135, taking on Aljamain Sterling, more than a natural 35er, flirting with the idea of going to 145 because he's in fact a large 35er. But Merab's not a big 35er. Like, I met him over in Nashville when he came to corner one of his fighters at a Aries Fight Series show, Nashville Underground. He's a flyweight. I bet you he could make 125. But when Aljamain first got the title, and he was very very vocal about he wouldn't fight Aljamain, he even expressed the idea of going to 125. So I don't think he's that much bigger than Henry Cejudo, to be honest with you. And I don't think the wrestling would be all that effective. To me, it's that both guys are great with the wrestling, and then they decided, hey, if you want to be a fantastic martial artist, mixed martial artist, you need to blend the other skills. So they got working on the striking. Henry's got decent boxing. Henry's got some okay output. He is an okay striker, and of course, he's got some power. Merab Dvalishvili, meanwhile, he's just like more of a wild man, a little more reckless, forward pressure, crash the pocket, can take one hell of a punch. Jose Aldo had this guy absolutely rocked on wheels, And you see his ability to recover. You see his ability to come back. You see his ability to just swarm you with volume. And that Aldo fight, I thought, was a perfect example. He never scored one single takedown over Jose Aldo. He just outstruck him. He outstruck him. He put him in the spots that he wanted to, and he did a good job. He rebounds from that, from beating Peter Yan, landing 147 significant strikes and 11 takedowns. And the thing with Yan is that Yan never lost clean. You cannot point to one fight in Peter Yan's career where the loss wasn't controversial. He either got robbed on the scorecards or he got disqualified from an illegal move. Nobody beats the guy clean. You know, Sean O'Malley, flat robbery as well. Like, just Peter Yan's the man. Rob kicked his ass, Paul. It was a completely non-competitive fight. You see the levels where this guy's at. That to me is it. No, go ahead.
The story of the Yan fight was that he shot 49 takedown attempts in 5 rounds. It's like Yan was never able to really get off because he was literally just defending takedowns from the opening bell. It's like he's kind of weaponized cardio in a sense. And I feel like if this was a 5-round fight, that strategy would help him a little bit more. I guess he could do it for 3 rounds against Cejudo as well. And then against Aldo, he was 0 for 16 on the takedowns. I feel like he wins those striking exchanges against these guys who are technically better strikers because the entire time they're just going like, oh my God, I can't let this guy take me down. Oh my God, this wild man is in my face trying to take me down constantly. Like, he's weaponized you. Like, you defending takedowns becomes him winning. It's kind of brilliant. Like, we've never really seen anybody do it at this type of rate. Your official pick was Merab?
Yeah, man, because that ability to just keep going, the nonstop pressure and the action. So I think that eventually grinds away a Cejudo and gives him a points victory.
All right, so we have a little bit of disagreement in that fight there. Cejudo for me, Dvalishvili for you. Moving on down, we've got Anthony Fluffy Hernandez taking on Roman Kopylov. Hernandez, a minus 170 favorite. Kopylov can be had for plus 145. These guys are very, very much different, but like their trajectory in the UFC is very, very much the same, you know? We've got Kopylov rolls into the UFC, loses by rear naked choke to Carl Roberson, and you're just like, whoa, that's a bad look. That's a bad look. Loses to Duraev, gets taken down once, but like kind of loses in the striking exchanges. And since then, he is on a war path. It's like the stuff that you saw in the regional scene, it's kind of all coming together for him. The striking's very technical, slick, powerful, and it seems like he has pretty good takedown defense. Fairness, he has not really taken on anybody who has a solid grappling game. Fluffy, on the other hand, rolls into the UFC, gets absolutely trucked by Jordan Wright in 40 seconds. Takes on Marcus Perez, loses by anaconda choke to him. Ends up getting an arming guillotine choke on Rodolfo freaking Vieira all over the place. But it's like fight by fight, we're seeing, you know, his wrestling, his pressure, his entire game is starting to get better. Both of these guys meeting at this point in time. This is like an unsung fight on the card, but it's super, super interesting. I want to hear what you have to say before I make my official pick, to be perfectly honest. I mean, a lot of this fight comes down to, like, is Fluffy going to find those takedowns early? Maybe it's a better fight, a better bet to make in the live markets. I don't really necessarily have the answer to that pre-flop. Obviously, we're recording this show a little bit early, so I'm a little bit back in my research and stuff like that. Pre-flop, I don't know. I guess I would lean towards a dog shot on Kopylov, but it really comes down. It's like, is Fluffy going to be able to get those takedowns early and often? And I wouldn't be surprised if he does.
Yeah, I mean, for my money's worth, I would say, yeah. Like, Fluffy Hernandez is my boy. I compare him a lot to Jacob Malkoon, is that he floats under the radar in, like, popularity, but he fights the kind of fights that I, as a better, love to put my money behind. It's like, just wrestle the whole time. Chain wrestle, don't get tired, and just go, 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 go. Don't stand at range. Don't play punchy-kicky. Don't put yourself in bad positions. Chain wrestle, and have extremely good cardio. That's how Khabib fights. That's how George fought. That's how the best guys fight. John Jones. You want to win, that's how you win, and you win clean, right? So for the Fluffy Hernandez, the Jacob Malcoons of the world, because they're able to get, like we talked about with Mirab Dvalishvili, they can get 9, 10, take it, 7, 8, 9, 10 takedowns in a fight. It's going to put them at a huge advantage. When I look at Fluffy Hernandez, as you mentioned, he goes through, you know, a bit of a, you know, bad period. He knocked out Jordan Wright for the record, but he was smoking the weed. Yeah, it was a no contest because he was high. And yeah, and then they gave him some weird matchups. He loses to Marcus Perez. He loses to Kevin Holland. Not great. It's since then he's all about the wrestling, right? He chokes out Rodolfo Vieira, and that was a fight that he got Rodolfo very tired from the grappling exchanges. Rodolfo gasses, then he chokes him out. Then he gets Josh Fremm, right? He scored 8 takedowns on Josh Fremm, a guy that actually did wrestle a little bit in college, Slippery Rock University. Yeah, he took him down 8 times, right? And just completely swarms him. Marc-Andre Barrio. Barrio's been down on Florida. He's a big body. He's not the easiest guy to just throw down, but he gets another 8 takedowns, and it's the third round submission. Okay, this guy's not going anywhere. He's actively looking for your neck at all times. If you get back up, he's going to take you back down. And for a guy that fights at that kind of pace, it's so exhausting. It's so taxing. He seems to be able to keep it up, which I like. Third, coming off a decision win, where he swarms a guy. Barrio, he chokes down the third. Emin Shabazian, dude, it's the exact same thing. 6 takedowns, 4 submission attempts. Finally, TKOs him in the third round. He does not stop. He just keeps coming. And he's taking down some decent guys. And not once or twice, 6 or 8 times. When you look at Roman Kopylov, what I like about Kopylov comes from Russia, was a decent champion over in Russia prior to signing with the UFC. And as you mentioned, he had those trials and tribulations himself. I think he realized that, you know, wrestling could be an issue. His fight with Albert Duraev only went 1 for 9 on takedowns, right? So that's a decent feather in your cap if you're Kopylov. But he did have 5.5 minutes of top control. So, like, once you do get Kopylov down, because he's long, he's a long striker with these long limbs, he's not bang explosive back up to his feet. Takes him a lot of time to clear the legs. I feel like if Hernandez does take him down, he will accrue top control, right? Kopylov then goes to Dagestan, trains with just a murderous team of wrestlers, and his takedown defense apparently is way better. In recent fights, it has looked way better. But those fights, Licio Chicharito can't wrestle. Juan Holly Soriano apparently can, but can he, Paul? When have you seen this guy do anything with his offensive wrestling? Claudio Ribeiro, very one-dimensional striker. Josh Fremm, as I mentioned, did wrestle a little bit in college, but not the greatest wrestler going, I wouldn't say. Him running into Hernandez is that real stiff test where it's like, this guy's not going to shoot a few. He's going to shoot 10 or 15. He gets them in all of his prior fights. And if he gets you to the ground, he's a very good grappler, probably going to staple you to the ground and make you work. So that, toppled with the fact that Kopylov seems to gas in his fights, I would think. And if you're just looking at it on paper, it's like, oh, 4-fight winning streak. But even that Claudio Ribeiro fight, at the end of the first round, he almost gets knocked out. He looks flat gassed. And then he wins at the start of the second. But there's moments that you can exploit this guy. And he's a natural striker. So if you strike with him, that's where he's comfortable. If you make him wrestle and you lean on him and you grind on him, he will get tired from holding your weight. He will gas. Once he gasses, game plan goes out the window. So I like, again, Hernandez is heading in the right direction. He's a guy that's going to break into the top 10. You look how good Rodolfo Vieira looked this past weekend. You know, Fluffy Hernandez is a guy that didn't, it was a fluke the first time, but now I firmly believe that he probably beats Rodolfo the second time if they were to meet again. So, I fade Rodolfo and look like an idiot. But yeah, for me, the pick is Fluffy Hernandez.
All right, we got Amanda Lamache taking on Mackenzie Dern. Lamache is a -125 favorite. Dern can be had for +105. Who you got?
Yeah, so Amanda Lamache is another one of these fighters that does pick up victories, just not high on her. Not high on her, never been high on her. Been around the UFC for a long time. She made her debut in 2017 against Leslie Smith up a weight class and looked horrid. Got TKO'd in the second round. She's a little bit older. I think she's 35 years old now. And then the wins, Miranda Granger, no longer with the UFC. Amanda Suzuki, out. Livian Souza, she was a good Invicta champion, but oh my God, was she bad in the UFC. Monstrat Ruiz, the one-move girl. Angela Hill. Angela Hill is finally a top-5 contender. A journeyman sort of types, but someone that's been around the block. Not one of these easy Miranda Granger or, you know, Mizuki Inoue type fights. an actual legitimate fighter. And in that fight, man, she struggled. Like, she ends up winning a split decision. I could see her losing it. It was close by the numbers. She did score a knockdown on Angela Hill in the second round, but Hill had the better cardio. Hill put a pace on her, and Lemos gassed out, right? So she's offensively a threat to lower level type of fighters. But when she moves into that top five, top 10 echelon, those big moves don't work anymore. She's going to fatigue, and you can get her into some positions that you'd like. Her fight with Michelle Waterson, she gets her with the guillotine, but she did get taken down that one time. And then against Marina Rodriguez, clean knockout, can't take that away from her. And then Zhang Weili, the six takedowns, mauls her. It is a 5-round fight. Zhang Weili is one of the best going. It's a title fight, like it's the highest level. But she landed 24 significant strikes over the course of 25 minutes and got taken down 6 times. You're not going to falter for that. But again, here's somebody that's 35. Her biggest win, I guess, would be Marina Rodriguez in a fight that was fairly low output as well. She has been taken down a few times in the past. Her takedown defense overall in the UFC is only 55%. There's not a whole lot to love there. The output is non-existent. Her highest performance was the Angela Hill fight, 50. The other fights are 24, 29, 20, 29, sorry, 83 against Inoue, which was a punching bag of a fight. That would be her career high. It's far too low. Now, Mackenzie Dern, meanwhile, for as many faults as she has, and you could fault her across the map, of course, but to me, her just coming back from that Jessica Andrade fight is a massive show of character. She got killed. She got killed. She basically quit. Corner quit. She got knocked down 4 times. TKO'd in the second. Very bad look. Shows you where you're at in the sport. And I think for a pretty girl with a Brazilian jiu-jitsu background that could have easily gone back to that, already has money, even though she's paying for a divorce all the time, apparently. I think that she could have just gone back to a regular life, but instead it's like, I want to jump back on the horse and I want to do the damn thing. So Mackenzie Dern's got heart, and she's someone that does have that ace jiu-jitsu, but she's working on the other skills. She's working on the wrestling, even though it's still not that good. She's working on the striking, even though it's still not that good. But to her credit, when it's not working against Jessica Andrade. It's not working against Yan Jinan. It's not working against some of the better girls in the division. There's progress being made. The jiu-jitsu edge over Amanda Lemos, it's certainly on the table. The wrestling edge, Dern's not a good wrestler, but Lemos rocking that 55% takedown defense, Lemos being taken down by not great wrestlers in the past, allows Mackenzie Dern a hope that maybe she could complete one. And if she doesn't complete one, she maybe could pull guard the way she did against Tisha Torres and then just go right on the offense right away. There's a path to victory with that grappling. If the fight doesn't hit the ground, Dern's usually screwed, but that's against girls like Andrade. Against Lemos, Lemos is super low volume. She's only throwing, landing 30, 40, 50 significant strikes over the course of 3 rounds. So Dern, a girl that landed 126 against Angela Hill, doubled her up. Path of victory lies in that she could just out-volume her. She's got some decent pop. She dropped Hill. She dropped Amanda Bobby Cooper. She does have some sting in that right hand. She's got good cardio, especially for a 3-round fight. She's got a grappling edge. She's younger. It's even money. I got Dern.
On top of that, like I yeah the Dern was somebody that we were like pretty out on for a long time, but she's really kind of turned a corner. I know the Andrade fight was pretty ugly, wasn't able to get takedowns. Like the stats look relatively close, but like nothing was close about like what strikes were getting exchanged there. She was
Oof.
eating absolute bombs and throwing out volume, but like it was pretty clear. Without a takedown, she was in big trouble there. In fairness to her, Jessica Andrade had a standing arm triangle and got the finish against this very opponent in Amanda Lamash. So, I'm with you. Like, I mean, Lamash could get a knockout, is definitely in play, but I'm gonna lean more on the fact that like Dern has shown insane durability over the course of her career than just her last fight. Before that, it's just like she just took bombs from literally everybody. And then, yeah, Zhang Weili really, really, obviously the champ, but really, really exploited the ability to get the takedowns there. Dern has the level of jiu-jitsu. It's like she doesn't need many takedowns. It's like all she really needs is like one, and she could close the show in this spot. So I like Dern as well. But yeah, I don't even think I'm going to chase a prop on this one. Because I see both paths to victory. I mean, the most surprising would probably be Dern by knockout, but we've seen that before, even too. So, either, yeah, Dern money line, Dern decision is obviously in play. But yeah, no props for me, just the money line. Mackenzie Dern. We got Marcos Rogério de Lima taking on Justin Tafa. Rogério, minus 140 favorite. Tafa can be had for plus 120. Low-level heavyweights. Marcos Rogério de Lima, kind of a good hammer, not a great nail, typically. The real key for him is obviously landing leg kicks early, staying out of range. He's a pretty big, even though he fought at 205 pounds, like, I'm not expecting him to give up any size against Justin Tafa whatsoever. He's filled out that 265-pound frame. But the key for him, I think, will probably be getting takedowns, particularly early in the fight, while Tafa's most dangerous. I have no intention of betting at least at, you know, on Sunday, 6 days in advance of this card. But the pick for me right now will be Marcos Rogério de Lima. What about you?
The bookie wins on this one because they must have gotten together with the UFC matchmaking team and they were like, hey, let's catch Cody in a real tight spot here where we put Pitt, the number one and number two least favorite heavyweights of his, in a fight against each other. Everybody that knows me knows my hatred for Marcos Rogério de Lima. There's no world that exists I'm betting him over anybody. And for the record, he does win. And I generally lose money when he does win. I'm not betting on him. He is awful. He's been awful for the entirety of his career. Yeah, he's won fights outside of Waldo Cortez Acosta, mostly against awful guys. But Paul, I can't get behind him. Not only is he a 38-year-old ballooned up light heavyweight, he has no cardio. He's got BJJ black belt, and then he gets smother choked. It was a forearm choke he gave up to Romanov. It's a fake BJJ black belt. Duke can bang on the feet for all of 3 minutes before he gasses. I don't like him. I don't like him. I never liked him. I'm sure he's a really nice guy in real life. I just mean in terms of consistency and skill set, putting my money behind him, it's never going to happen. It's not. So yeah, I fade him at every turn of the court. We got Derek Lewis last time. It was plus money against this bum. How does that happen? I don't know. I'm happy to bet that all day long because I'll bet anybody at plus money against Marcos Rogério de Lima. But now we get Tafa. And so that one's unique because Tafa's terrible. And I tried to fade him last time out as well against Austin Lane. Didn't work out. The first time they fought was a no contest. I thought Lane looked a lot quicker and this and that and blah, blah, blah. Second time around, Tafa just stood his ground and he hits hard. So he's one of these traditional Samoan guys, your Mark Hunt types, that he's heavy set. He hits hard. His brother, Junior, you know, is a kickboxing standout. They have that pedigree. He can no doubt bang. Holding him up against the cage is an effective strategy. Taking him down is an effective strategy. And Marcos Rogério de Lima will do exactly that. Herein lies the problem. Why not for the first time ever take Marcos Rogério de Lima? Because you know he has the grappling advantage. You know he has, even though he's a fake black belt, and he is, you know he's still got an advantage on the ground over Justin Tafa, who is a nothing belt. Yeah, why not take him? Why not take him? I'll tell you why. Because even though he may take him down, even though he may lean on him and he may grind on him and he may win a round, maybe a round and a half, maybe even two rounds, at some point, especially if I bet him, he's just going to gas. He's going to gas. When he gasses, he won't be able to get the takedown. Once he can't get the takedown, he'll be forced to exchange with Tafa. And once he exchanges with Tafa, he gonna hit the deck. So I seen it happen in the Stefan Struve fight, same thing. Dominates the first round, drops him, spends the entire first round on top, but doesn't do anything with it. And then the second round, he's huffing and puffing, curled over, and gives up an easy win. So, like, I've seen him do this multiple times. He's not somebody that's gonna correct his mistakes simply because he is who he is. He's a 38-year-old light heavyweight competing up 65 pounds. Paul's not wrong. Well, he's filled out that frame. Maybe so, but it wasn't like he has this giant frame. He's what, 6'1"? 6'1", 262 pounds. Like, he's out of shape. He's not ripped up. He's a little bit older. He's super slow. He's super plodding. But yeah, he's built like a Brazilian fire hydrant, and if he hits you in the first 3 minutes, it's going to be a problem. He is not a great wrestler, and he's not a great grappler. But in comparison to Tafa, sure, yeah, no, he has the advantage. But I can't do it, dude. I think Tafa just tires him out, punches him out at some point. It's not going to be pretty. It's not going to look good for us early. But if he's got to pray tease Giles him at some point in late second or third, he's going to do it. So I will take – we got a underdog on Mackenzie Dern was the first dog pick of the card. I'm going to go follow it up with the second dog pick and take Tafa.
I mean, I'm not going to like fight you on that one all that much. I'm actually quickly just going through. All right. Harry Hunsucker attempted one takedown on Justin Taffa. Harry freaking Hunsucker, former, you know, worst fighter in the heavyweight division.
You can't spell suck without Hunsucker.
You can't spell suck without Hunsuck without suck. That is 100% accurate. I think that's the only... So he has 100% takedown defense, but that's because the only person to actually attempt a takedown against him is Harry Hunsucker. Oh, no, sorry. Carlos Felipe tried once as well. So yeah, like it's a real wild card kind of fight, right? Like Marcos Rosario de Lima's grappling could be just so much better. But you're really not gonna know that until they're in there fighting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the other thing is, as I mentioned, Rogério de Lima 6'1", 265, but Toffa's 6', 265. So like, yeah, I'm sure you can take him down, but he's built like Mark Hunt with these giant tree trunk legs. And even though Mark Hunt was a kickboxer that couldn't wrestle and got destroyed on the ground at every chance he could, he eventually learned enough takedown defense where it was like, oh, he's a rock. He's a rock of a man that throws an uppercut up the middle. Try to take him down. Try to take him down. Not that easy. Taking down these big, big boys, not that easy. So,
yeah.
Just bite the bullet and do it.
I was on Derek Lewis last time out at like plus 200. That line was freaking nuts. I couldn't understand, you know, a few of like the paid touts or whatever, they put out Marcos Rogério de Lima when he was like minus 150. And that market got so steamed that like late in the week, you're just like, this is dumb. Like this is heavyweight. And we have a former light heavyweight taking on the Black Beast. And boy, oh boy. Yeah. Thoughts and prayers to your CLV, because bye-bye, it's dead. Moving on down, we've got Rinya Nakamura taking on Carlos Vera. Rinya Nakamura, minus 900 favorite. Vera could be had for plus 600. These are like one of those things. You know, back in the day, Cody, we got Habib when he was like coming into the UFC. We got him at like minus 150, minus 200. We got, you know, playable lines on these prospects. Like that's, I feel like, the biggest difference is like you get a guy like Rinya Nakamura who's got all of the wrestling accolades, seems to have like power in his strikes, half decent grappling, wasn't able to get what's his face? The guy who fought last night. Wasn't able to sub him, which hurt me. Fernie Garcia. Yeah. Wasn't able to sub him, but like had him in some tough spots. The kid looks like the goods. Carlos Vera, on the other hand, he's pretty old, I feel like, coming into this opportunity. Must be like a situation where like they're like, you know, you're probably not going to get into the UFC any other way. I don't know how he got here, but they're throwing him right to the wolves against Rinya. I mean, Rinya's the pick. At minus 900, you probably have to find a prop. And no props are out right now. So not entirely sure what to do with this fight. Rinya's the pick, but is there value on a minus 900? It's hard to argue. Hard to argue that there's really anything, any sort of meat on the bone there from a, you know, a value boy perspective. But yeah, the kid looks like the absolute goods. This seems like probably an even easier fight, at least on paper, than his previous ones. And yeah, the best thing to come out of the road to the UFC, in my opinion.
Yeah, like you said, he's got all the accolades. He's one of these guys that already has a solid foundation and then is now coming to MMA. They're moving him up the right way, and it looks like he's going to be a potential threat down the road and a contender for years to come. So we all like what we see out of him. Carlos Vera, meanwhile, this is more just like a dream come true. So he's 36 years old, and this is his UFC debut. He's beaten a couple decent regional show guys. He's also lost when he steps up on the regional show against guys like, you know, Levi Moles or, you know, Fisher back in the day. Those guys will beat him. He's probably not going to get to the level that he's, you know, wanted to. It, like I said, it's a dream thing. So what does he do? Signs up for the Ultimate Fighter and jumps on the Ultimate Fighter, has one fight in the house against Brad Katona, was the eventual champion, but always has mixed results in the UFC for whatever reason. And he lost to Brad Katona, so they just opt not to sign him. I mean, he lost the first fight. He's 35 years old at the time that he was on The Ultimate Fighter, and it's just like back to the regional show. So he booked a fight for CFFC on the regional show, on the regional scene, and then they needed someone for Daniel Marcos, super last minute. He jumped up, and Marcos pulled out of the fight with visa issues. So because the UFC had signed him, because he had jumped up, and because he had pulled out of the CFFC fight to take the UFC fight that never happened. It's like he's under contract now. You owe him a fight. So this is the fight. And they're not giving him any favors. It's not like, hey, yeah, thanks for that one time. Here, let's give you a guy that's doesn't got a promising future, or is a little bit older, or is coming off some losses. It's like, here's a standout wrestler with just phenomenal physical strength, excellent grappling, very tenacious, solid cardio, racking up wins in the UFC. Yeah, it's going to be a problem. Now, as you mentioned, minus 900, what can we do with that? Not much, right? Money line, not going to be great. I can't put him on my top ticket just because it's not going to add anything to the second play. So he's got to be a second ticket kind of guy. I got a gut feeling the submission play is on the table because when you look at Carlos Vera, he's been submitted before. He struggles with grapplers. He doesn't have the greatest takedown defense. He gets put in bad spots. I got a feeling that Nakamura takes him down, pounds on him a little bit, takes the back specifically, and then locks in that choke. Now, some people might be saying, ah, couldn't choke out Fernie Garcia. Let me tell you something about Fernie Garcia. That fight against Hayter Amil last night, but we'll call it
He's in
last week
another
because it
tough
was a.
spot in that fight.
He moved up a weight class from 135 to 145 on like 4 days' notice, got absolutely concussed half a dozen times, and then this beast of a man, Amil, who's jacked and looks like a 55er in there, has got his neck and is squeezing it in. He gets out. There's no quitting him. And for the record, we always talk about Mexicans can't get knocked out. He didn't get knocked out. The ref saved him because he wouldn't go down. The guy's a badass, man. Nakamura is going to get in that same spot, grab a hold of Vera's neck and squeeze it, and he's going to do the tap. So look for him to get taken down. Look for him specifically to give up his back because that's generally what he does when he scrambles to get back up to his feet. And I think Rin, who's only getting better and better, only getting more confident, and has a vice grip on him, is going to grab him. So I think I would chase it with that Nakamura submission prop if I wanted to juice it up in my favor.
I mean, I'm ready to hurt again. Because I was on, I had like, because I think it, like last time it was like a straight pick 'em or like even minus, it was like minus 150 for like him by knockout, and then him by decision was like plus 500, and then like him by submission was like plus 500, and so that was the avenue I went, and he had multiple opportunities. Now you see Fernie just literally will not quit. Yeah, he was so close to getting submitted against Hyder Amil last night. And just like it was in deep.
So
Somehow
deep.
he popped his head out. So he's just probably very, very hard to submit, is what it is. Don't hate it, Cody. I mean, we don't even have a number, so what value is in that? But I imagine if they line it like they did last time, the sub will be definitely longer than the knockout prop. I will tell you that much. All right, we got Min Yang Zhang taking on Brenson Ribeiro. Minus 145 for Zhang. Ribeiro can be had for plus 125. Who you got?
Yeah, this just looks like your classic under 1.5. These guys are big boys and they are going to bang it out. So 205ers, large man. When you look at Brenson Ribeiro, he's an offensive dynamo, but he's also pretty glassy himself. His last three wins are all first round knockout. Bruno Lopez, first round knockout on the Contender Series. Joe Paulo Fernandes, first round TKO due to ground and pound. Gilmar Dutra Lima, first round 52 seconds due to ground and pound. And then his losses, Paul, David Berdzekian and Marcio Breno are all first round knockouts as well. So he's 3-2 over his last five. All five fights have been first round knockouts. He cracks you, it's going to be a problem. You crack him, it's also going to be a problem. Now, he was supposed to fight Zhang in December of last year. I'm not sure what happened, but they had some complications. Fight just got rebooked. So both guys should be in shape. Both guys should have an extended camp. Both guys are still fairly young. And when I look at Zhang's fought just a crusty level of competition, and it's all the same thing. His last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 13, his last 13 fights have ended in the first round, right? He's lost some of those in the first round, and he's won a bunch of them in the first round. That Askar Mazarov guy, right? Remember him? Comes over, just the biggest lied about his record, had taken off losses. Mm-hmm. The UFC cuts him immediately after it is an abysmal performance. That guy beat him in the first round. Beat him, Zhang, in the first round. Of course, Zhang would have been like, I don't know, 20 years old at the time. So, like, it's hard to fault him that much. But they're both guys mirror image each other. Is that they can both throw. They both can't exactly take it. They're not very defensively sound. In Zhang's case, when he fought George Tokos, I had George Tokos because I'm an idiot. And Zhang was a plus 450 underdog to Tokos. That would have been considered his first real step up. A guy that had some decent wins, had some credentials, and he cracked him. And that's the problem with these guys that don't have much skill, is that anybody can throw a punch. And if you have God-gifted power, you hit a guy, it's not going to be good. And when the guy stands right in front of you and doesn't move his head, he's giving you an opportunity. Both of these guys finish in the first round. They are both made of glass, but they can both crack to a certain degree. So it screams dog or pass to the highest level. But I don't even just want to take the dog. I just feel like taking Ribeiro because I think seem to like him a little bit more. But I don't know, man. Yeah, I got to go with Ribeiro. Plus 125 underdog. Someone's getting cracked. I'd take the under on this thing. The fight doesn't go the distance. If you take one guy specifically, take him by knockout. Don't go for that decision prop. The difference to me is that Zhang wants to kickbox. Zhang seems to be able to just catch you clean. Ribeiro seems to be able to catch you clean, but he does really well on the ground. Like, he gets guys down, gets on top of them, and then just swarms them with the ground and pound. I think Zhang's got an underdeveloped ground game. If you want to have a kickboxer versus kickboxer, maybe he'll crack you. If you have a kickboxer versus a guy on top of you raining down punches, going to favor that guy. And so if you want to go Brazilian BJJ versus Chinese CJJ, yeah, BJJ is going to win outright, right? So give me Ribeiro to maybe either fight a smart fighter's land first, but it's totally dog or pass.
Yeah.
I have to take the plus 125 on the dog.
So, yeah. Let's, yeah, 100%. The I remember Brenson Ribeiro on the Contender Series, and that was, he is a terrifying individual. Like, he was waiting for, like, Dana outside of, like, the room where Dana, and he's just like, Dana, you could tell Dana was, like, startled walking out. Like, he is a brick of a human being. Obviously, he's got a lot of first round finishes. Where you really sold me, though, is that getting knocked out by Mozarov or whatever his name was, the guy with like the fraudulent record, that, or Askar Mozarov, that is like the biggest red flag of all red flags. In fairness to him, that was back in 2018, I suppose. But who is he taking on outside of the Tokos guy, who, I mean, I have no idea who he is, but you say he's all right. Otherwise, all of those other
Tokos, all of those other one win, yeah,
all of those other first round finishes are against basically absolutely nobody. So yeah. I'll go with the devil I know in the fact that, like, Brenson Ribeiro for 15, or he was 14-5 going into Contender Series. Like, I watched him and I'm like, that's a dangerous man. He's gonna have some fun fights. I don't know if he's gonna, like, do anything, like, you know, in terms of, like, becoming a top 10, top 15. Like, I don't see that, but we're gonna have some fun watching them. And yeah, these are the exact type of fights where you take, it's a dog or pass type of situation, 100%. There are no props out for the total on that, but I will keep an eye out for the under one. I mean, they'll probably line it at, they'll have to line it at 1.5 rounds. Yeah, it'll probably be like a minus 250 to the under 1.5 rounds. Like, they're going to juice that 100%. And it'll probably get steamed the moment it releases, is what it is. That's the industry that we live in these days. We got Danny Barlow taking on Josh Quinlan. Barlow a minus 190 favorite. Quinlan can be had for plus 165. Barlow, another guy who's on Contender Series this past season, looks like he's got the skills. Like, he's pretty, like, very, very fast, slick striking. Quinlan, on the other hand, I believe he came from Contender Series as well. He was the one who won by knockout, and then he pissed hot. And then he showed up, and it's amazing. He wasn't on the gear, Cody. Didn't seem to be the same guy. I don't know. Yeah, what was that fight? The Trey Waters fight. It was pretty ugly there because, like, we had seen Trey Waters get finished relatively early. So obviously, get, like, Waters is a weird, awkward style, super, super tall, long, type of opponent, but it was pretty ugly for him. And yeah, obviously he had the Jason Witt fight, but Jason Witt, like a cool breeze, strolls by and it knocks that guy unconscious. So I think Barlow's a rightful favorite. Probably not somebody that actually is going to, that people are going to be clamoring to bet on because, you know, Contender Series guy, but he's one of the guys I remember from Contender Series that I was like, okay, I can see how this guy works at this level. So Barlow for me, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Barlow as well. You mentioned the thing with Quinlan. Quinlan, when he was an amateur, basically finished everybody in the first round. As a pro, he was having a lot of these quick finishes. And then when he got that no contest against Urban from the pissing off positive, yeah, one has to wonder what that took out of him. He looked so uncharacteristically bad his last time out against Trey. I couldn't get behind him right away. But Barlow, I like Barlow. Here's my Danny Barlow story. So the last time I was down in Nashville for Aries, like it was a Nashville Underground card, but last time I was down there for the Aries show, it's in Nashville. Barlow's from Memphis, Tennessee, from the law school. So he actually had a training partner on the show. So the way they got it set up is, you know those like punching machines, like the speed bag comes down, you punch this thing, it registers your score. Well, they got one there, and it's like $100 to the highest punch. So I take like 4 or 5 cracks at this thing. I can't get it to 800. Like, I'm so close, but it's like 772, 786, 794. I can't break 800. My boy Greg Hopkins, he's there. He's a former amateur and middleweight pro, right? 185 pounder. Not exactly 185 at the time. He's a little off season. He blows this thing, and yeah, he's way higher than me, but it's like 920, 917, 920. And, you know, a couple other people are hitting it. This place is packed, right? There's a lineup. Danny Barlow rolls in, and they're just like, oh, Danny Barlow, blah, blah, blah. He took one punch on this thing, dude. One single punch. It's like 967. It's the highest of a room of like 500 people, most of which have been punching this thing 10 times. It's at Michael Chandler's gym. There's 100 pro fighters in this room. Murad Vajvili and those guys. Like, to register that kind of score, just intense. He threw one punch. One punch. So I look at him, and his nickname is Left Hand to God. Brother, I understand why. Oh, my God. He's got some legitimate power. And as you mentioned, he's got skills as well. He took that fight versus Raheem Force on the Contender Series. Both guys are actually from the state of Tennessee. Both guys were friendly. It was like, who's the real deal that's going to progress with their forward, and who's the guy that's going to have to go back to the regional scene? But you've seen the second that he touched him, he put him away, man. So Danny Barlow's a guy that's physically strong, got a lot of good skills going his way. But at 28 and that kind of physicality, when they give him guys that are primarily going to want to stand in front of him, he's going to be one of these Trevor Peak types. He's got more skill than Peak in terms of, like, you know, sharper boxing and all these things. But the underlying, you know, I can just detonate you with one shot, it still remains there. And so raw, rough around the edges in certain situations, yes, you have to match this guy up properly. Quinlan is exactly that. He pissed hot in the Contender Series like 3 years ago, and he's had like one fight since then. So he's not super active. He's primarily a striker. He's a guy that it needs to get you out of there in the first two rounds, because if he tries to swarm you with volume, he's going to tire out. He's not on the good stuff no more, and he's coming off a very, very, very flat performance. So how does he approach this one? If he wants to come out and wrestle Barlow, it's deriving from your natural gameplay. You're not a wrestler. So he's going to strike with him, and he's going to be maybe a little faster, and he's going to be a little more spry. He's going to throw a few kicks, and he's going to have to engage him. I think Barlow just melts him over the top. So this is another situation. I will just take the Barlow straight up, but it's another situation where when you look at Josh Quinlan, he never been knocked out, right? Like, he got hit 100 times by Trey Waters, but other than that, he was undefeated. So there's nothing to suggest that he's chinny, but he got hit 100 times by Trey Waters. And what I'm trying to tell you is that if Danny Barlow hits him 100 times, he's not going to the hospital, he's going to the cemetery. So, I think you might be able to get a good Barlow by knockout prop, given that Quinlan has no history of durability issues. But the guy damn near broke the machine, took the $100 cash, and waltzed out of there. I'm a big Barlow fan now, man, so I wish him nothing but the best. You know, not the easiest UFC debut going, but, you know, if you're the real deal, you got skills, these are the fights you should be winning.
Yeah, and the total on that is already kind of juiced. I mean, it's minus 125 to the under 1.5 rounds. So I wouldn't expect any sort of like crazy Barlow by KO props to become available, to be perfectly honest. But obviously, we're doing the show way too far in advance for any props to be dropped yet. But yeah, it sounds like Barlow is the play for both of us. We got Oban Elliott taking on Val Woodburn. Oban Elliott is a minus 270 favorite. Val can be had for plus 230. You know, this is Val. This is Val's opportunity now, because he took the spot that nobody wanted, taking on Bo Nickel on incredibly short notice. But like, he takes that fight being like, they're gonna give me another opportunity. And obviously he gets absolutely throttled in 38 seconds, but it's like, now we're back down to 170, which is a more fitting weight class for him, because he was obviously way too short, 485 pounds. I mean, most middleweights outside of the top 15 probably have the same fate as Val Woodburn. So I will admit, I don't really remember too much about Oban Elliott, his fight on the Contender Series. I see he won by majority decision. The back of my brain is telling me that, like, that it wasn't the greatest performance by any stretch of the imagination. Do you remember that one? Because this is one of the fights that is a little bit foggy for me. Yeah, what's your take here?
Yeah, so I actually don't mind Oban Elliott. He was fought for Cage Warriors for a while before coming over to the Contender Series. So, he did have some legitimate experience. And then the guy that he beat on the Contender Series, that Kike Brito. Kike Brito, not bad. I mean, that Robert Berchek guy proved to be the biggest fraud this weekend. Eeyore kicked his ass, Paul. But, like, Kike had knocked that guy out in the first round at 170 pounds, right? So, like, Kike Brito, not a bad fighter. The fact that Oban Elliott was able to go out there and kind of, I don't know, have spots. As you mentioned, majority decision. But Oban Elliott got the four takedowns. He outstruck him, outlanding him 58-42. It's not the easiest fight going. I think there's some stuff that you can like from Oban Elliott, and he will be my pick here. Again, because we're shooting the show so early, it's not like, I just don't know that I have that same confidence I should from these early prelim guys as opposed to some of the main card guys, just because you've had more time to look at it or you're more familiar. But I like what I see out of Oban Elliott. Again, he's fought in a decent level of European regional scene guys. He's fairly well-rounded. Got some good things going his way. Val Woodburn, meanwhile, it's not like it's anything against him. How much can you really know from that one fight? But I'll tell you the issue to me. The issue to me is, here's a fighter who has less than 10 pro fights and he's 30 years old. He's not fought necessarily a bad level of competition, but he's fighting on lower level regional shows. When they call for Bo Nickel, like you said, this is your opportunity to jump over having to go to LFA and jump over having to go to the Contender Series. And jump over having to physically earn it from that, like, that one key victory or that long winning streak. It's like, here's an opportunity to just take a guy that nobody else wants to fight. Look at that guy fighting Umar Nurmagomedov. I'm not saying he's a badass. Just nobody wants to fight Umar.
So they'll sign a guy. Fight? I've seen Umar complaining on Twitter. I didn't know somebody actually took it, though.
Yeah, well, it ain't Corey Sandhagen. But yeah, they have to bring in some guy who's just like, I'll do it because I don't have a job at the UFC and I would really like one.
So Val takes Al-Makin. It. He's 17-1 from Kazakhstan.
I bet you he's good. Yeah, Maxim was 17-0 from Kazakhstan. He lost to Charles Johnson, Paul. So
that's fair.
Salt Bay, that's a Salt Bay record right there for you, pal. All I'm saying is nobody wants to fight these guys, so just putting your hand up will get you a job. And that's what Val did. The more troubling thing to me, though, is Val talked big game. He went to Vegas. He had all these guys in Vegas talking him up, how this guy's a decent training partner in the gym. He jumps in there. Everybody and their mama knows he's going to get taken down and smashed, and he did not get taken down and smashed. He got knocked out right away. Bo half closed his eyes and hit him. And it folded him up, man. So, like, that's like, Bo can crack, sure, but, like, that's not Bo's primary game. He was going to wrestle.
People in the know looked at Val Woodburn and were like, that guy doesn't have a neck. So, I don't know how he could get a submission.
Yeah, you know, impossible. How are you gonna front headlock a guy that there's nothing to grab onto and pin him to the
Exactly.
ground? But yeah, I don't know, man. Even Bo seemed surprised. Like he closed his eyes and cracked the guy, and the guy toppled over, and it was just like, oh my God. And then after that, it's like, yeah, I got hands too. And it's like, yeah, okay, that's fair. But Val, I'm not necessarily sold on his cardio. I'm not sold on his durability. I'm not sold on his level of experience, his level of talent. Whereas Oban, I'm sure he's still got some learning to do. But again, here's a fighter that's only 26 years old and already has 11 pro fights, already fought for Cage Warriors, which is the top European regional promotion, went on the Contender Series, fought a tough Brazilian guy, beat him, you know, like that's how you make it and you go on. And so is it like the easiest walk in the park? One guy won his last fight. One guy got beat up in 36 seconds. Like, no. Like, you know, expect a better version of Woodburn, but in the same breath, expect a better version of Oban Elliott. And so I don't think that Woodburn's going to throw up the volume necessary. I don't think he takes him down. So he's going to have to hit him with a one-hitter quitter. And I think Elliott's got a decent chin on him. So I'll take Oban Elliott.
That's fair. I really don't have like a take on this one. Just looking at Val Woodburn's his nickname's the Animal. I mean, there is no neck there. That could be problematic. And he's coming down to 170. For the purposes of this show, I doubt I actually bet it, but I'll pick Val. I'll pick Val. Just strictly based off of his appearance on his Tapology page. Real hard-hitting analysis
You're gonna
here on
take
the
Val. Yeah.
I'm gonna take Val. I
You know what
think
the interesting one is? You can
like
finish it
close
though.
fight for Oba and Elliott and Val's well, I believe he trains in Vegas in like a pretty decent room. He's obviously been getting ready for this fight. I think 170 is gonna be a better fit for him. And yeah, Oba and Elliott was like his last fight was like using wrestling to take him down. Maybe he takes him down, holds him there, and like Val can't do anything. But like Val at 170 is probably a big time spark plug. Could be a dangerous fight. I have no interest in betting a Contender Series guy that I didn't really necessarily think was good when I watched him on that very night at -270. That's really what it comes down to for me. It's probably a straight up pass, but it's the show is called Dogger Pass, and that's where I'm at. We got Moret.
Well,
Oh,
yeah, go ahead.
what do you
No, we'll
want?
pass. We'll pass. We've talked too long about Val Woodburn. I was
We
going to just make some
have.
more cracks at him, but we should move on.
Okay, let's do that. We got Miranda Maverick taking on Andrea KGB Lee. Maverick -200 favorite. Lee can be half +170. Who you got?
Yeah, this one's CF Dom model all day long. Not because you like it, but because that's the way this is going to go. So I like Miranda. I like both these girls, but Miranda Maverick. You know, I like the cut of her jib. She comes to the UFC. She is supremely jacked. And I think this girl is so big and strong that she's gonna just outmuscle a lot of girls to the ground and beat them up on the ground. But it doesn't really play out like that. She initially had some quality victories. Victoria Leonardo is not that good, but she beat her like when she was just a kid, right? She beats goes on Invicta, beats her again, beats Chayna Young, beats Deanna Bennett, beats Pearl Gonzalez, UFC debut. Sorry, second fight in the UFC, Jillian Robertson. Like everything is trending in the right direction. And then I don't know what happens. I don't know if it's a mental block. I don't know if it's the rest of the division caught up, but suddenly Miranda Maverick just gets super stale in there, right? Like the wrestling is not converting to the highest level. The striking's not there. The volume's not there. She doesn't have much of a reach to her. 65, I guess it's not that bad. 5'3", 65 inches, but she pulls up on her punches. Like she doesn't step through. She doesn't land on the target. She's not trying to drive through their opponent. She just like pulls the punch, throws it, three quarters way gets there, pulls back. You know, the wrestling, half committed to the wrestling. So when she fights, I guess the Sabina Mazo fight, we were both really heavy on her. But yeah, she wins, but she had to take her down four times because even Mazo was getting up. Her fight with Shayna Young, she dominates Shayna Young, but Shayna Young, not very good. The Jasmine Jessa DeVicius fight, whenever she shot the takedown on Jazz, Jazz just reversed her, just stonewalled her, ended up on top of her. Ends up taking her once down cleanly herself. Striking numbers will show that it was tight, 67-63. But you go and you watch the fight. Jasmine's just got her number. She's got her number standing. She's got her number on the ground. Miranda Maverick looks largely lost. And then she comes from that. She has the fight with Priscilla Cachoeira. Now, as you know, because Priscilla Cachoeira is your girl, and Priscilla is capable of landing a heater on somebody. But when she hits the deck and you're on top of her, it's game over. It's game over. She can't grapple. She can't wrestle. Miranda Maverick took her to the third round. They dominated her till the third round. But, like, the grappling's not that good. The wrestling's not that good. The striking's not that good. And fight to fight, she looked as good against Macy Barber. She looked really good against Macy Barber, got robbed. Then she looked worse against Blanchfield. She looked mediocre against Mazo. She looked okay against Shayna Young, but it's low level. She looked awful against Jasmine. She looked pedestrian against Priscilla Cachuera. It's like in five fights since her fight with Macy Barber, she's trending downwards. And Macy seems to be trending upwards. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. What matters is I don't see the improvements. And all of a sudden, I'm just not very high on her. And all of a sudden, they're going to try to feed her to you at some point as a minus 200 favorite, which she is here, and it's very unwarranted. And so here's my issue with her beating Andrea Lee at these odds, right? Maverick is kind of live or die by those takedowns, right? Like, even where she has those spots of success, like Cachoeira or Mazo, it's because she's getting three takedowns in them. The Jasmine Jessa DeVizios fight, where she can't take you down, she's not comfortable on falling back to plan B, which is being forced to strike. She needs the takedowns. Lee has traditionally had bad takedown defense, but she's worked on it so much, it's not that bad anymore. Her fight with Natalia Silva, her last time out, you know, she's somewhat competitive, at least fighting a high echelon fighter, takes her best shots, not bad. Her fight prior to that with Macy Barber, they both landed multiple takedowns. She had five, Barber had two. Fight before that, Vivian Arroyo. Vivian Arroyo is a pretty tough girl who fights some, just fought Natalia Silva in a very competitive fight. Andrea Lee had a clean knockdown, outstruck her, took her down once. She's there. She's just not over that hump. But Arroyo is a former world title challenger. Macy Barber was supposed to be, you know, this big deal. Natalia Silva is actually legit. Those are good girls. Miranda Maverick is fighting the Lilian Jajuas of the world. You know, she's fighting Sabina Mazo. She's fighting Priscilla Cachoeira. It's not really looking all that good against them. So if it's even money, maybe a fool like me could trick myself into playing one more on old Maverick one more time for shits and gigs. But like minus 200 and worse, you're asking for problems because it's all optics. It's all Lee is on a 3-fight losing streak. And Maverick won her last fight. Let Lee fight Maverick's competition and see how good she looks. Real good. Let Maverick fight the girls Lee's been fighting, and she's on the 3-fight losing streak herself. Right? So even money fight, I'm going to agree with you. This line, I cannot agree with you. And it just has to be an auto bet on the underdog. So I will take Andrea Lee to win by decision. Boop, 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 boop,
boop, boop, boop, boop, boop. Yeah, the CF dot model all over this one, Cody. Yeah, it's Andrea Lee. Just mostly because, like, if you look at Mavericks, I'm sure you probably said it in your like 5-minute break, but down. But I'll keep it pretty quick here. Andrea Lee, when she's not on her back getting controlled in the wrestling, which is obviously in play, and that's how Maverick would probably have her most success in this fight. But it's like she's able to throw up 100 significant strikes in volume. And I feel like from what we've seen from Maverick, it's like that's not really in her wheelhouse. 60 is probably like a ceiling in terms of significant strikes that we'll see from her in a fight. And a lot of these women's fights do come down to like who's just more active, who's throwing more volume. If Maverick's not getting takedowns, securing control, and absolutely holding her down while they're on the feet, she's going to be, you know, she's going to be eating probably more shots. And it's plus 170, so don't threaten me with a good time. So, yeah, Andrea Lee is the pick for me. I haven't made any bets. Obviously, we, as we have said multiple times over the course of this show, we're recording the Sunday after the previous UFC Apex card. So it is very, very early in the week. This could probably change. Make sure you follow at CJ Saftik on Twitter for any sort of change that could happen over the week. Usually on Saturday morning, he'll drop his PRP. But the preliminary PRP, Cody, hit him with it.
Yeah, we're going to go with Alexander Volkanovski, even money at the top. Robert Whittaker, Ian Gary, Mirab Dvashvili, Anthony Hernandez, Mackenzie Dern is dog number one. Justin Toffa is dog number two. Rinya Nakamura, Brayson Ribeiro is dog number three. Danny Barlow, Obon Elliott and Andrea Lee. So four underdogs. That's what we had last week. We got four come through, but there was like six on the card in total. So is what it is. We're going to go for another four this week as well. 12 fight card. Hopefully, yeah, hopefully four of the dogs come through. And yeah, listen, this is a top-notch pay-per-view. I think there's going to be a lot of excitement. And the only thing that makes it better is when you make it a winning and profitable night. So, Paul, I know you're going on vacation. You'll be hopefully watching it on the beach somewhere. But you're talking about Florida like it's, I don't know, Dominican Republic or something. Like, it's winter there too, right? It's cold, isn't it?
No, it's like it's, I mean, we speak in Celsius. But, like, the forecast in, like, the Fort Myers area is like 22 to 25 degrees Celsius, which is like mid 70s, yeah, low 80s every right. single day. I think it gets a little bit chilly at this time of year at nighttime, which is kind of welcome. Like, who wants to sleep when it's like super, super hot and sweaty and disgusting?
Yeah, you know what? You're
Megan
not wrong,
said
Paul.
She
not
does,
wrong.
But
no, I have a fan on, even in the wintertime.
Not for my body type. It doesn't work. It doesn't work out well. It gets all messy.
But, celiacs don't like the heat at night.
No, it's pretty cold. Like Pat in this studio here, Pat's always like turning the heat all the way up, and like, yeah, I built from a different cloth, I suppose. Quickly, the plays that have my attention, not necessarily don't have my money yet, but Volkanovski in the main event. I mean, it's a pick 'em. Give me the champ. Give me a guy who's able to put up a pace that like. That really everybody outside of the 155-pound champion has really struggled against. So Volkanovski's the man. One fight is not going to make me jump off the wagon there, even though I really do respect Ilia Topuria. Brenton Ribeiro, it's your classic heavyweight. You're going to give me plus money on a fight that I think, at the worst-case scenario, is 50-50. And I saw him on Contender Series. He looked dangerous at the very least, but who knows? It's a bit of a wild one. The under 1.5 rounds will probably be super juicy, but probably a nice little parlay piece. Danny Barlow, I think, is a nice parlay piece. Andrea KGB Lee will be getting some of my money. Considering, haven't done it, considering Cejudo and considering Dern. Like, those ones I put question marks next to because I'm thinking about it. The ones that I really liked were, Lee, Quinlan, Ribeiro, and Volk. That is if oh, and Rinya by sub. Interesting Rinya to see sub. What happens when that. I'm ready to hurt again after the Fernie Garcia fight because that one was damn close. It was like plus 500, and I had a bag on it. Would have been. A
I can totally see that one. I'd also recommend watching Wayne. He's my greasy theory. Lock it in Volkanovski, baby. Ilia Topuria, right? When he was supposed to fight Charles Jourdain in 2022, and he botched the weight cut, and then they moved him to 55, and he fought Jay Herbert at 155, weight 156. He's only actually had two fights since coming back down to featherweight. Bryce Mitchell, he weighed 146 flat. Josh Emmett, 146 flat. But I mean, that was a championship fight. You got to make 145 flat, Paul. That 1 pound is going to exhaust him. So, let's go, baby. I'm pumped up. Enjoy your vacation. Well deserved. And glad to do it early so that we get at least chat fights instead of skipping it altogether.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. All right. That is it for us this week. Hope you enjoyed the show. For producer Megan and Cody Saptic, I'm Paul Shaughnessy saying goodbye and good luck. Oh, oh, oh. Oh.